This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, it is a little cold here today for us. I think it's 60 degrees outside, and I just want to send greetings to my brother who had 3 degrees yesterday up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. He is a youper, and so he can take it. Although, I don't know if I could take it anymore. When I was a child, I loved it, but I'm not sure I could take 3 degrees. It just occurred to me that it's like crawling into my freezer. But my brother loves it. And when he comes to visit us here, he immediately heads for the thermometer and pushes the temperature as low as it can go, and he always rates a hotel based on how cold he can make the room. So for all of you people up there in the snow, enjoy it if you can. Now, I want to go through a couple of things today because it's the end of the year. My goodness, it's program 103 for the year. So I have one more program this year, and there are just so many exciting things have been happening. And I do want to remind you that, you know, it is my real joy to bring you interviews with best-selling authors and also to be able to showcase new authors, authors who are just beginning their careers. It is always so exciting when I meet an author and they're just starting, perhaps it's their first book, their second book, they're just on the edge there of their career, and they have years and years to look forward to, and it's very exciting for me to be involved. I know that one of my favorite authors, I met her when she had her first book out, and that's Carol J. Perry. She's been on the program a number of times to talk about her wonderful series, The Witch City Mysteries, and she's just a delightful author, and to see how in just over 2 years, she's grown as a writer, and it's almost magical. Now, she is being published by a smaller publisher called Kensington Press, a very fine publisher, and recently, back in September, they showcased two of her books in one of their displays at Barnes & Noble, and so her books were in all of the Barnes & Noble stores across the country. That was so exciting for her. And one of the nice things about Kensington is that she didn't require a query letter. She didn't have to go through an agent. She presented her books directly to Kensington, and they took her on. And since then, she's just rolled with it. I know that I was very happy that Carolyn Hart, who is a Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster, of course, gave her a blurb for one of her books, and I was so happy with that because that's the wonderful thing about writers. They are so helpful to each other. Particularly, I found all of the little mystery writers, cozy mysteries, although Carolyn Hart doesn't like that term, but the mystery writers really want to help each other, and so I was thrilled when Carolyn gave to Carol a blurb. And Kensington is a wonderful company, and if you are not trying to find an agent, if you want to try to go directly to them, you can do that. Now, Kensington just had a really exciting news, and this is a wonderful thing for them. John Scaglia, I have to pronounce it properly. It's an Italian name, Scaglia. John Scaglia just took the worldwide rights to The Long Flight Home by Alan Ladd. And the agent for this worldwide right sale was Mark Gottlieb of Trident Media Group. And he was, of course, on the program a few months ago. And a wonderful, wonderful young agent. at Trident, and he has been getting one deal after another and a really exciting agent. Now, one of the things when, you know, I've talked to everybody about agents, and I'm going to, at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to play an interview with a very famous agent, Lane Zachary. When you are looking for a book deal, you want to find someone who is active, someone who is getting book deals. And one of the things that I am working on, and January 1st, I'm going to have a new web page up. And on that web page, I'm going to have a section where I have agents that you can contact, agents who have been on the program, and I will have details there about what they are looking for, and also all of the archived interviews that I've had with agents. When you are looking for an agent, I have told you many times that the best place is really to go to Publishers Weekly. So now on my website, you can actually go to my website, which is radio-joy on paper, starting next week. And I will have up there a link to Publishers Weekly and also the highlights of the recent book deals, because it really gives you an insight into what the agents are looking for. And I was reading sales that went last week, and I love when you are thinking about writing your query letter or you are thinking of doing your pitch. Sometimes they say, well, should you compare your book to another book? And a recent case is really fascinating, because one of the publishers compared a book called, it's called My Skull, In My Skull, by J.P. Pomare. And this author just got a big deal. And when the publisher pitched the book, it was described as a sort of a combination of Sharp Objects meets Room. Well, right there, Sharp Objects meets Room. This obviously was enough for the publisher to have an idea of what kind of audience he would have for this book, what kind of potential sales. So it was done by comparing two books. Now, if you have written a book, what two books would you compare your book to? This is important for you to know. It's not always necessary to write it in the query letter, although this is quite common now, but definitely if you're going to do a pitch, if you're going to a conference, if you're going to a workshop, and you have really that elevator pitch, that 1 minute, it's not even 3 minutes. Elevators go too fast. You really have like 1 minute. And if you can compare your book to two really interesting books and two books that an agent or a publisher would immediately understand, it is something that you should work on. And that, again, goes back to the fact that you should be reading the books that are in the type of books that you're writing. So if you're writing thrillers, you should know what is in the marketplace, what's the latest things, and that's why one of the reasons you should be going to Publishers Weekly. It gives you an idea of what is selling. And to look at the New York Times best-selling list, because, again, we can't do anything about it. Sometimes they have a few things wrong, but generally speaking, I mean, that's what's selling. And so you really need to know that when you're out there selling a book. And I enjoy Publishers Weekly for several reasons. One, because they just reported that there was a 3% increase in hard book sales. It looks like people were buying books here for the holidays. And as I have said many times, they make wonderful, wonderful gifts. And so if you are, you know, always looking for a gift, there are two things that you should buy people. You should buy them a MyPillow. And you can do that by going to MyPillow.com and using my promo code Patzy, P-A-T-Z-I. And then, of course, anybody who gets comfortable in bed needs to have a good book before they fall asleep on a MyPillow. And so It is a wonderful gift to give to yourself for good work and to anyone who has a birthday. And now we finish with Christmas and Hanukkah, but Valentine's Day is coming up, and I have some really great ideas for Valentine's Day books. As a matter of fact, one of them is by an author whose book is coming up on January 30th, just in time for Valentine's Day, and it's JoJo Moyes. Now, every time I have turned on the television in the past month, I have seen that movie, Me Before You, running. And, of course, that was written by JoJo Moyes. It was a bestseller. And so I want to replay an interview I had with JoJo, and because I think it's a fascinating look into the mind of a best-selling author. So this is JoJo Moyes. I was just telling everyone about you. What can I say? You are amazing. There are not many people who have been 65 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list.
That was pretty amazing, I have to say.
I mean, it's like, woo!
It's like a dream come true. It was kind of incredible.
It is incredible. And then at a certain point, you had three of your books on the best-selling list.
Yeah, you better stop because I think people are just going to not like me anymore.
No. Well, it's a well-deserved success. I know that you sold at least 5 million of Me Before You, which is a nice title. You sold 5 million of those, so the new book
it
after
is.
You.
So really, the book picks up 18 months after the end of Me Before You. And it was a book I hadn't planned to write, but something kind of strange happened with Me Before You, which is, unlike the books I wrote before that one, I just had this endless stream of emails and messages from people who wanted to talk about Louisa Clark, the main character. And I don't know if it was because they saw themselves in her or because it reflected something that was going on in their own lives, but it meant that whereas mostly your characters leave you once you've finished a book, Louisa never did. And so finally, after kind of a couple of years of responding to these reader emails, I allowed myself to ask the question that they were asking me, which was, well, what would happen to her next? And once I had an answer, I just felt I had to write the book.
You know, it's always hard to do a sequel. It's not a easy thing because you have to maintain the integrity of your characters, and you have done that.
That's exactly it. I hope you think so.
Yes.
I thought it was going to be easy. I'm going to admit that. I thought that because I knew the character so well and I had this plot mapped out in my head, I thought, well, this is going to be great because my biggest problem is usually creating the characters. That's the thing that I really put the most work into, just to try and make people who are kind of complex and a bit original and interesting. And what happened was I started writing, and then I just kept hearing the voices of readers and feeling this weight of expectation of people sort of saying, oh, no, she wouldn't do that, or I don't like the fact that she did this. And it was quite paralyzing for a while. And in the end, I sat down with a friend of mine who's also a novelist, and she was pretty tough with me, and she just said, you cannot think about what other people think. You just have to write the book that you want to write and, you know, hope that they'll come along with you. But you can't think about what other people are going to think. And she was absolutely right, because as soon as I just went back to being in my bubble, as she put it, then it came a lot more easily.
It's rather fun that you got to do this.
Oh, do you know, it was the most fun because there's not a lot of characters who I really feel a kind of a huge personal connection to, but I loved writing Louisa. I still love writing her. She was one of those rare things, you know, the character that just kind of drops fully formed into your lap, and I knew who she was from the start, and it means that I can kind of put her in all sorts of situations and know how she will react, and I'm sure you and a lot of your writer listeners will know that that really doesn't always happen. So yeah, I love writing her. I never get tired of it.
Well, one thing I love about your books is that I love how you managed, well, you sort of juxtapose the upper class and lower class as it's thought about in England. Now, in America, of course, we don't have that class thing. So, you know, but I lived in England for quite a few years. I lived in Sonning, you know, near Henley.
Uh-huh.
And so I was aware of the class difference and how in Lou's case, you know, she's a barmaid. And yet there's all this other class mixture that you do, and I think I love it. That's brilliant.
Oh, thank you. I mean, as a writer, it's you know, the thing that books really thrive on is tension. And what Class does is introduce a whole nother layer of tension into people's relationships. And I think it's only when you leave the UK that you realize how locked into that structure we all are, especially outside London, funny enough. You know, it's kind of made explicit in the countryside by the kinds of houses that people live in. And
it's people don't understand. I explain. I would know people who had made a fortune and they bought beautiful, you know, Georgian homes, and they did everything with the greatest taste, and they, you know, renovated them. But it didn't matter because always where they were born or what class they were born into was always the defining factor. Unlike in America,
that's
where
so
you can,
true.
You know, you can be dirt poor and become a millionaire, and you can talk about being dirt poor and you're proud of being dirt poor. Whereas in England, it doesn't quite work that way. It's a matter of a combination of the accent, which you never, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's fun. I like that that you take just ordinary, you know, a barmaid or a cleaning woman and make mm-hmm. them the main figure in the story, because most people aren't upper class, and so I think it works very well for you.
Oh, thank you. I agree. I think that possibly, you know, what we would call the working classes get a bit of a raw deal in fiction, because in the UK, if people are including kind of those sorts of jobs and those sorts of scenarios, it usually means that someone's about to get murdered. People don't tend to be massively interested in the lives of people at the bottom. And I am interested because I've kind of done those jobs in the past. And I'm interested in kind of society as a whole and what happens if you are brought up in the belief that, you know, you can be anything and do anything, but in a society which is increasingly kind of structured so that you probably can't. And, you know, I like to sort of look at the way people keep themselves in those prisons as well. I mean, the thing that sort of interested me about Lou in this book was how we can think we learn these life lessons and you want to move on and lead a bigger life and take forward all the things that you've learned, but often we just slide back into old patterns of behavior, and it's really luck and judgment whether you manage to pull yourself back out again.
I think one of the hallmarks of your writing is that you do like to have that sort of tension, not just of classes, but tension of different types of people. I like that very much. I know that so many people in before you is a disturbing subject, what you wrote about.
Yeah.
And both from the point of view that the story's about a quadriplegic and it's a love story, and then, of course, the ending. But you've done a brilliant job of making it really a true love story. People are talking about how this is going to be a classic of this type of book. It's wonderful.
Thank you. I just found out today that one of the major retailers in the UK has named it one of their 100 classic reads of all time. So I'm kind of feeling a bit overwhelmed by that at the moment. But no, I think what I like is to take an issue that isn't black and white. And I think just because you're looking at an issue like, you know, quadriplegia or assisted suicide doesn't mean that it has to be dressed up in some kind of highfalutin moral language. I think that often if you just tell a simple story using straightforward language, you can actually cover some really complex issues. And the thing about that was it didn't come up with a conclusion. It didn't say, this is the right way, this is the wrong way, this is how you should do it. It just asked you to put yourself in other people's shoes.
Yes, and exactly. It let the reader make the decision within themselves. And I think that was really a very nice way to do it. You don't make that decision for the reader that this is good, this is bad.
Thank you. That's really what I intended.
Well, I think, you know, of course, it's very exciting for you after being on the best-selling list and then, of course, getting a movie deal. And
yes,
not just not just any movie
fun.
Deal. I mean, you got Emilia Clarke, right? Is from Game of Thrones, and
Sam Claflin. He you'll know him from Hunger Games,
that's right.
And from a couple of other films like Love, Rosie. He's just wonderful.
So it must have been exciting to you watch the filming because you did.
I did.
You wrote the screenplay, right?
And that's right, and it was a real steep learning curve, and I loved every minute. And I think, you know, as a writer, there's a kind of huge privilege in getting to see your people become real. it was the first day was sort of mind blowing.
Well, that's what I, you know, it's wonderful to see your words on paper, but as a screenwriter myself, it's hearing somebody's speak your words that really it's amazing. It's an amazing feeling. So,
and I think, you know, well, you'll know being a screenwriter, but being on set, you learn that some words work really well and some lines work really well, and others you have to rewrite because they don't play as well off the page as they did once they're in the hands of the actors. And that was kind of part of the really interesting thing as well, learning that, you know, screenwriting, the screenplay does not exist by itself. It comes to life really with the actors and the action going on behind and the speed and the music and the color. And yeah, that was fascinating.
I am sure that the new book after you is going to be, well, you have already, I think, built in audience of 5 million people. So
I hope you're right.
Well, no, I'm sure, because anyone who has read Me Before You, I think that they are left with that thing, what happens to Lou? And I think your story has been, you know, you did a great job in bringing it forward, and I think it's going to be another bestseller. And I was right. It was another bestseller. And I'm sure her new book, which is called Still Me, which is coming out in January 30th, will be another bestseller. And it's always wonderful if you like a writer, to pre-order, because one of the things on Amazon is that they have an algorithm. So if you pre-order an author's book, they take notice of that. And it's helpful. Of course, in her case, as I said, she's got 5 million or more followers now that her, of course, the movie was so successful. And I'm sure there will be a movie, another movie and another movie. But the new book sounds very exciting because Lou, the main character, of course, comes to New York to start a new life. And she's really confident that she can embrace this new adventure. And so it's going to be a fun book, because if you like the character of Lou Clark, you will enjoy seeing the ongoing story and following it along. Now, I'm going to take a quick commercial break. And when I come back, I'm going to have another interview and some more news for you. Yeah, we'll do a book buzz first.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz. Readers will have a blast following Sarah Winston on her next adventure as she hunts for bargains and bad guys in A Good Day to Buy by author Sherry Harris. Here's the buzz. Sarah Winston's estranged brother, Luke, shows up on her doorstep, asking her not to tell anyone he's in town, especially her ex, the chief of police. The timing is strange, to say the least. Hours earlier, Sarah's latest garage sale was taped off as a crime scene following the discovery of the murder of her client. All Luke will tell Sarah is that he's undercover investigating a story. Before she can learn more, Luke vanishes as suddenly as he appeared. Well, her brother is no bargain, but could Luke be the killer? Find out by rummaging through the clues with Sarah and pick up some garage sale tips along the way. A Good Day to Buy is the fourth in Sarah Winston Garage Sale Mysteries by Agatha Award-nominated author Sherry Harris. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. My employees and I would like to thank you for making MyPillow possible. Years ago, when I invented MyPillow, I thought I was the only one out there with problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I'd flip-flop all night, or wake up with a sore neck or headache. So that's why I invented MyPillow. You can adjust MyPillow's patented fill to your exact individual needs to help you get to sleep faster and stay there longer to get the quality sleep you need. I back it with my 10-year warranty and my 60-day money-back guarantee. And now to thank you, I'm bringing back my best offer ever. Buy one of my MyPillows and get another one absolutely free.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY. P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and in a few minutes I'm going to play an interview that I had with Lane Zachary, one of the best agents in New York City and also in Boston, where she has offices. So as I mentioned before, it is important when you are trying to sell your book that you know your market. One of the best ways to do that is to just walk into a Barnes & Noble and say, where would my book be? What shelf would it be on? And that gives you an idea of what you should be looking for. When I mentioned about comparing books, deal that J.P. Pomare's new novel got, My Skull, and the publisher or the agent compared the book to two other books, Sharp Objects Meets Room. Now, if you are writing thriller suspense books, you should know that Sharp Object, of course, was written by Gillian Flynn, and Room was written by Emma Donoghue. Now, these were obviously very successful books in that genre, and as a matter of fact, Room was made into a movie, won 4 Academy Awards. So the minute that the agent said to a publisher, this book is like this one and like this one, the publisher knew immediately what the agent was talking about, and if it's a trusted agent, and this case it was a trusted agent, the publisher is pretty sure that they're going to have a hit on their hands. So this is one of the ways that you have to position yourself. You have to know where your book is going to be physically on a shelf, and you have to know what books you can compare your book to. And keep that in mind when you are writing your query letter. And in a minute, Lane Zachary is going to tell us about what she's looking for in a query letter. Why I bring agents on is it is so important when you are out there and you are trying to find an agent and you attend conferences or you attend workshops that you become familiar with the important agents or, you know, if there are new agents online, when Lane first came on in the business, she got an absolutely marvelous deal that she's going to tell us about. But if you know something about the agent, if you've checked, first of all, you must always, before you send a query letter, you should check on the agent. You should know something about her, what or him, what they like. If he likes books about history or about a specific era of military history, for example, or if he likes cookbooks, or if she likes books that have crocheting in them, or books that have, this is up to you. You have to know the person to whom you are sending your query letter. You can't get one of those A to Z agent books and then just pick out a name and start sending a query letter. It's not going to do you any good because that's not the way to approach an agent. And if you know something about an agent, for example, if you are ever at an event and you meet Lane Zachary, well, if you listen to this interview, you will have something to talk to her about, not just about your book, because you don't want to walk up to an agent and start blah, blah, blabbing about your book. You want to be able to say something nice to the agent, well, I saw that you had a deal a few months ago for this or this book. That way, it shows the agent that you have paid attention to the marketplace, that you are in the know. And this is absolutely vital. It makes you a person to them. They get so many people walking up to them saying, I have this book, I have this book, I have this book. And they really never get to know you. But if you listen to the interviews that are on my archive page, and all you have to do is go to my website, radio-joyonpaper.com. And there you can find the interviews both with the authors, your favorite authors, and also with agents. This way you get to know the agents before you meet them. You get to, you can recognize their voices, you understand sort of their sense of humor, and a little of their backstory. And this is vital for you, vital information for you to use when you actually meet an agent. So now we're going to listen to an interview that I was very happy to have with Lane Zachary, and then I'll come back and tell you a little bit more about it.
Sincerely yours.
I'll be yours, sincerely yours. All my life, sincerely.
Lane Zachary is the founder of one of the premier literary agencies, Zachary, Schuster, and Harmsworth, who represent over 300 authors. Hi, Lane. Thanks for joining me. Where are you? Are you in Boston or New York?
Well, today I'm in Boston. Tomorrow I'll be in New York.
It must be very exciting for you to find a new writer and to know what a difference you can make in his or her life.
Well, that is just so true. I mean, I've been an agent for 25 years now, and when I still stand up and say hallelujah when I find a writer who really knows how to use the English language beautifully as well as tell a good story. You know, so many writers think that agents are hard-nosed, but we are just always on the lookout for a good storyteller and a good writer.
I know that you're well known for all of the great work you've done, especially, and I love this, the story of your auctioning a book, the great story about the New York City blackout of 2003 and your auction. Tell us how you...
Oh, my goodness. How did you know about
that?
Well,
you know, it goes around in the writer's circle. We hear about, well, everybody would love to have the book auctioned, right?
This, yes.
How often does that happen, actually, where you have a book to auction?
Well, I mean, this is how it works, so that I could let your writers in on the process. When we work with a writer that we think can really have a career in publishing, we usually work with them, you know, for many, many months on their proposal or novel or whatever it is they're writing. And once we feel it is good enough to go out to editors, we usually send it out to somewhere between a dozen and 18 editors in the hopes of getting more than one editor interested and then having an auction. And the auction that you speak about that occurred in my early years. And would you like me to talk about that?
Oh, yes, I do, because I love the writer involved, the author involved, Lavanya Sankaran.
Oh, my
goodness. I love the book. I love The Hope Factory. And, of course, it was for the, I think it was the short stories, right, that you had the auction.
Yes, The Red Carpet.
Tell us about what happened there.
Okay, well, it's really a very exciting story, you know, once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing. I met Lavanya at a writer's conference, fell in love with her short stories, and worked with her for quite a while on them. And then we sent them out to everybody in New York, all the top editors, and everybody wanted to buy this collection. So I took Lavanya around, this is what you do, to all the editors that were interested in her book, and then the day after, I begin an auction. So the auction was going fast. The way it works is, you know, you go from the high, you get bids in, and you go back to the smallest bidder, and you tell him that the highest bidder is XYZ. Do you want to top it? And it's rather grueling because, you know, it happens one at a time. You have to call each one after the previous one goes up in price. So this was going on for days. And Lavanya wanted to watch the whole process. She lives in India, so she came over to watch. She was in my office. When all of a sudden, I was on the phone with an editor, and we lost our connection. And this was happening in New York, and our office is on the top floor of a building in the middle of Manhattan, and we very, very slowly watched the lights go out one by one in all the different buildings, and we heard the air conditioner shut down and the elevator shut down. It was a total blackout. And so I had to end the auction, and we were caught in the city. We had nowhere to go. The trains weren't running. So many of us lived in Brooklyn at the time, so we ended up staying at Lavanya's hotel room, myself and my assistant, without the heat, the windows wide open. The restaurants had flown open their doors because their food was going bad, so there was free food and beer on the street. It was quite an amazing thing. But getting back to the auction, early the next morning, I couldn't sleep. I saw the lights slowly go on, and, you know, I was just so grateful. So the trains were not yet running, so I walked to my office, and I walked into my office, and the phone rang. And this publisher, who was on vacation, you know, somewhere far away, you know, far from the blackout, called and said, "Is the auction still going on?" And I said, "Are you kidding? New York is in a blackout." He was, you know, somewhere, I think, in North Carolina with his family. So, you know, the auction, you know, was still over, but finally when the lights went on the next day and the city was back to normal, we continued it. And it went on for days, you know, and I happened to get a two-book deal for Lavanya.
And a six-figure advance, right?
A six-figure advance.
Wow.
With a very big publisher. She was very, very happy. You know, both of her books, you know, came out, and she's now working on a third novel, which I hope to sell in another auction when it's ready.
Well, I love the Hope Factory. It's like a upstairs, downstairs set in India. And I think it's a great book. And I hope when she gets to town next time, you let me know and she can come on the program, because I find her so interesting.
She would love that. She would absolutely love that.
And that's an example of, you know, an investment banker who becomes a writer. And she really tells a great story. Let's go back just a little bit to the beginning of your career, because this is another fascinating story and another auction. It looks like you're really good at this auction business.
I was,
yeah. because this is a beautiful story. I remember the day that my big sister, took me into McGregor Public Library in Detroit, and I checked out my first book, Little Women.
Right.
It was, even today, I remember that day. I remember the sunshine. I remember the smell of lilacs outside. It was a thrilling day for me to find Little Women. So for you to come across an unknown Louisa May Alcott book must have been unbelievably thrilling.
Well, it was just absolutely thrilling, Patsy, and I love the way you described, you know, your first meeting up with Louisa May Alcott. What happened with me, I was a very young agent. I couldn't have been practicing more than 2 years. And from what I understand, the Alcott estate was in need in some cash. So there was a manuscript of Louisa May Alcott's in one of the attics that it was in her handwriting on yellow paper with crossouts. And, I mean, it was phenomenal to see that. It was one of the highlights of my career. And it was a book that Louisa May Alcott had never sold in her lifetime. And so the family decided to sell it to a rare book dealer. And lo and behold, a humble school teacher slash principal in New Hampshire bought it, and he brought it all over New York to see if an agent would take it on to get it published. And, you know, this was, I think it was the 90s, people were very jaded, and nobody wanted to take it on. And pardon me for saying this, he showed it mostly to male agents. And they all said, oh, no one reads Louise May Alcott anymore. She's passe. Nobody's going to be interested in this. They paved the way to me.
Oh, I think I would almost faint if I saw an... it's just too exciting to think about.
Yes, and so he brought it to me, and he took it out of the box.
Oh.
Like, I just about fainted. I mean, it was just on old yellow paper, and the school teacher had it transcribed, you know, into a computer, and we worked on it, and. Once again, we sent it out to at least a dozen houses, and Random House did what's called a preempt. They stopped the auction and offered an amount that was so high to take it off the table so nobody else could bid on it. Yeah. And we accepted that preempt, and the rest is history.
Oh, that's fantastic. Queen of book auctions.
You know, Patsy, I wanted to add one thing to what I just spoke about. Regarding auctions, you know, auctions are wonderful and they sound very glamorous, but I would like to let your audience know that you know...
It doesn't happen all the time.
It doesn't happen all the time, and the bottom line is just getting a book contract is like gold.
Yes.
So always remember that, you know, it just takes one. To see the brilliance in your book, buy it, and do wonderful things with it.
Exactly. You know, one of the reasons I started Joy on Paper was to give writers an insight into, you know, what it takes to find an agent. For fiction, the query letter is always the gateway to getting an agent to read more. But have you ever gone beyond a query letter? I mean, have you ever said, okay, well, maybe this person is having a bad query letter day and just read the 10 pages anyway?
It's hard because we get so many in our inbox a day. So your query letter is so deeply important. Do you want me to talk about that? Okay, well, first of all, if you do go to writer's seminars or writer's conferences, glom on to any agent there and try to make a connection. You know, that's a big help. But in terms of the cover letter, I'll start with the subject line, which shows up in the email. Put something very smart in there. Don't say the name of your novel by Ted Williams, because that's like everything else we get. Say, like, I went to the Pacific Northwest Writing Seminar, or I got my master's here, or a journalism degree here. It, you know, like, lead with some strength in so that an agent will even open the email and read the query letter. Now, so the query letter is very important, and it's not the time to be sugary or anything like that. What I would do is, you know, the first paragraph, are we talking about fiction now?
Yes, fiction.
Okay, the first paragraph should be about your fiction. And then the second paragraph, I would take a pause and let us know any credits that you have received, because this really separates the men from the boys. If you have published anywhere, say it in the second paragraph. If you have studied with anyone, you know, let us know right away. If you've attended any writing seminars or gone to graduate school in writing, anything that will show that you have had some professional experience and you're not just somebody writing us with out of the blue. So get us into your grip us in the first paragraph. You know, take a pause and let us know how great you are with your credentials, and then go back to writing about the novel.
Have you ever rejected a writer and then later on that person's turned out to have a bestseller?
Well, I haven't had that, but all of us here have certainly rejected writers that other agents have taken on and sold for a lot of money. And yes, there is one bestseller that has slipped out of our reach. That's correct.
That happens.
So, yeah, so it does mean that every agent is different, so don't give up.
Okay, well, those are very wise words from a really wonderful literary agent, Lane Zachary. Now, right here, if you listen to this interview, you discovered quite a few things about Lane. First of all, she has a lovely sense of humor. She loves Louisa May Alcott. She went through the blackout and did a fantastic deal. And she's done some great auctions. So if you are at a writer's conference and you see her, now you have an opening. Now you have something to say to her. You're not just going to walk up to her and say, oh, I have this book. I want you to read it here. You know, that just turns these agents off. Instead, you can walk up to her and say, hi, I listened to your interview on Patsy's radio program, Joy on Paper. And I thought it was so funny how you got an auction deal during the blackout. So it's little things like this that make the difference between, as she said, you have to make that connection. You have very little time when you meet an agent, and you have even less opportunity when you send in a query letter. So you must make sure, as she said, the subject line of your query letter catches their interest. And that, now she mentions that you should put Barbara Poel, another literary agent who works with Irene Goodman, always talks about the hook, the book, the cook. And in perhaps it shouldn't be in that order. You need the hook definitely right there in the subject line when you send in your query and in the first paragraph. And as Lane suggested, put the cook right there in the second paragraph. Tell something about yourself. The reason that if you have anything that shows that you are going to be professional and that you will be taking on a deal with real business sense, because being a writer is not just being creative. It is also being able to handle the business and to be able to respond quickly when you need to edit things, respond quickly when you need to make appearances. All of this is important, and that's what agents look for, because remember, an agent doesn't really want a one-time best-selling author. It's nice, but they are looking for a long-term career where they're going to be making money year after year after year on you. So it's up to you to just find out more about an agent before you contact them. And one of the best ways is go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com, and you can click on the archive page, and I have an entire page full of news about agents, both about their interviews that they've had here on the program, and also on the new website, I will have a list of what type of books an agent is looking for. So I want to do everything I can to be helpful to you so that you are ready to get out there and sell your book, because that's what the name of the game is. And for all of you readers out there and people who are looking for gifts, again, I want to mention something that I mentioned a few weeks ago when Lawrence Block, a mystery writer of America Grandmaster, was on. He was on to talk about his book. And I wanted to mention that if you are looking for a gift, one of the nicest things is to give a gift of an anthology. And Lawrence Block, of course, is the editor of a wonderful book called Alive in Shape and Color, and that's his latest anthology. And it includes many, many wonderful, some of the best writers in the world have participated in this book with him, including Michael Connelly and who else? Lee Child. It's just so many. And his daughter, Jill. So it's a wonderful book to give as a gift. And his previous book, In Sunlight, in Shadow, which was based on the premise of he gave every author the opportunity to select a painting by Edward Hopper. And the stories in that book are fantastic. And locally, the Bay Area Professional Writers Guild has come out with an anthology. And I will put a link to that on my webpage, too. And one of the wonderful things is that an author gets, sometimes it's their first opportunity to be in a, this is their first opportunity to be published. And so I want to encourage all of that. And I have a, I'll be talking about another anthology coming up on my next program. Again, what I want to ask all of you to do is please support Joy on Paper by going to my Facebook page, Radio Joy on Paper, and to like me, and I will like you, and it really helps. And then also to follow me on Twitter. And what I am doing is I'm working now, as I said, on the webpage, and I have come out with some really fun videos that I will be posting every week, not just about books, but also about other things. And so follow me on Facebook, Radio Joy on Paper, and friend me. And then I would also like to hear from you. If you have a favorite author that you would like me to invite, or if you have a particular book that has changed your life, send me a message. Go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com. And while you're there, you can click on some of the interviews with best-selling authors like David Baldacci, recent guests, David Baldacci, Mary Higgins Clark, Lee Child, Nelson DeMille, and so many other wonderful best-selling authors. And then, of course, check out the interviews with some of the indie authors. You will find them fascinating, and I hope that you will, buy a book. On the new webpage, you'll have the opportunity also to buy a book. So I hope you will do that. And what can I say? I always say, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen or in an audible book, which, by the way, reminds me, I was just listening again. I can't stop it. Just a little bit more of A Gentleman in Moscow, which is a wonderful, wonderful audible book. And another favorite audible book, I just really enjoy it so much, is Delia Ephron's Syracusa. It is one of those audible books. There are four different voices on that recording, and I think they are fabulous. But also remember, it is never too late to start writing. So if you have ever thought about writing, then just sit down and start. You will be proud of yourself, and it will keep those little gray cells of yours working. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. And say something nice to somebody today. And I will start by saying thank you very much to Big Ed. And this is Patsy with a Z, hoping you have a wonderful day. And I have one more exciting program this year. And then the new year is going to be really fun because I have the new webpage coming up. So again, remember, like me on Facebook because it is very important. I want to get a whole million of those likes. So just go to Facebook, Radio Joy on Paper. Thanks. Bye-bye now.